Alright, so tonight we're going to begin our discussion of the 12th Bracha of Shmoneh Esrei, the Lam Al Shinim. And tonight I want to do just, I don't want to call it ragtag, but some miscellaneous, it's a nicer word than ragtag, right? Some miscellaneous points that are all along the same general theme of the concept of a 19th Bracha, an additional Bracha. So this Bracha is the 12th Bracha, and just conceptually, this is clear from a couple of places. The Maharshal makes this point explicitly in Maseches Megillah, that this bracha is an insert, which means that before this bracha, that the Al HaTzadikim, the next bracha, bracha 13, was actually bracha number 12, and that Al HaTzadikim really remains bracha number 12, and this is in a certain sense bracha 11b, and you know it has its own segue and makes its own sense structurally to be between Hashiva Shofteinu and Al HaTzadikim. It's an insert between the two, but it's an addition, which means there was a structure of the Shmoneh Esrei before it, and we'll discuss, you know, both aspects when we get Ezras Hashem to Al HaTzadikim, that Al HaTzadikim is actually really more inherently the follow-up of Hashiva Shofteinu. So conceptually, this bracha is an insert and is an addition. And the very first thing that I want to mention, I meant to grab the Rambam, but I don't have the Rambams. I wanted to quote the Rambams. Actually, let me just one second. The Rambam discusses. Oh, actually, so before I go any further, I want. This is more of a note. For a technical note, especially of the strategy that we have in this class of going through the brachos, also gives me some time while I'm looking up where it is in the Rambam, that generally we try to very carefully analyze the very precise choice of words in the bracha, develop a very careful understanding of the words, and then from that get, you know, hopefully the deeper meaning which those words convey. The difficulty with this bracha is that this bracha was, believe it or not, not the Gentiles' favorite bracha. And while the Jewish people were under the authority of foreign nations, this bracha was censored in many ways. And you look at the Rishonim, and you'll find many different variations of the text. Some in big ways, some in small ways. But just to give a small example, write this all down just to make sure I'm getting the Kolbo says that there are 32 words in the bracha. And he gives an explanation of what the significance of the 32 words of the bracha are. The Rosh comes along in the Archos Chaim, and he says there are 29 words in the bracha, and gives an explanation of that, why there are 29 words. You count up our version, there's a variant which has 28 words, you count up our version that we have in front of us has 27 words.
Ashkenaz, you mean our version?
But yeah, the version that you will find in your art scroll, which we know in Shemayim they paskin like art scroll.
But is it by Ashkenaz, by Sephard, by Sephard?
What
do you mean by our bracha?
By ours, I meant the Ashkenazi Nusach that we have in our Seder. Right. So I did not open a Sfard Seder, right. Although I have. I didn't bring it inside. The Otzer Tfilos usually has some of the Nusach Sfard, but there's a Pirish called Tikkun Tfila. It's parallel to the Iyun Tfila. You can find it in the Otzer Mefarshei Tfilos. And the Tikkun Tfila is going through often Girsos, textual variations in the Bracha, and like he goes wild over here. Uh-huh. Because it's just... So just as, you know, somewhat of a historical note, this bracha is referred to in the Gemara of the bracha of the Tzadukim. So it seems to me that it was established, at least in some respect, in response to the Tzadukim.
Who were Jews,
right?
Why are they going crazy? The Gentiles are going crazy.
So historically also, there's other references to that it was really in response to the early Christians. The version of the bracha that we have, it's Valam Al Shinim. That's probably not the correct version. Most Rishonim, their first word was Valam Mishumadim, right? Mishumadim refers to Jews who have apostatized. assuming that's a word, a verb.
So why do we do this if it's probably not correct?
So there are a number of things that we don't thought we often, since the difficulty involved in verifying what is actually, you know, absolutely correct is almost impossible, we follow our Masorah. And the Gra writes about this, that there is a Kedusha to the Masorah that we have from our Tefillah, and that's why the Gra was against the Arizal's Nusach of Tefillah. The Arizal basically, it's hard in the first place because the Arizal never wrote down word for word a Siddur to know exactly what the Nusach Arizal is. Every one of these different Hasiduses that has what they label on the side of the Siddur as Nusach Arizal is actually their own reconstruction of the Nusach of the Arizal based on different things that he wrote, and you know, many different variations of what's supposed to be the Nusach of the Arizal. But the Arizal, based on Kabbalistic ideas, which we're not going to go into the whole thing now, meant to, you know, correspond to a certain thing, we're not going to get into it, but made I don't call it a new Nusach, it was supposed to be the recreation of an old Nusach, and wanted that to be the accepted Nusach, and the Gra said Nusach Ashkenaz is Kadosh, you know, with the Nusach that we have has its you know, it's a Masorah, it's Kadosh, and they didn't want to change it. But in any case, so that's just a
so what's the better translation? If this means the slanderers, the other word that you said?
Mishumadim means apostates, or those who have, I don't know what the verb form of apostate is, apostatized, those who have made themselves into heretics.
Transgressive.
Yeah, those who what we would call today those who have gone off the derech. So
slander is like, that's Lashon Hara, that's saying
well, it's not just Lashon Hara, it's really specifically referring to a Malshin is not just someone who speaks ill of someone, it's someone who generally speaks ill of someone to the non-Jewish authority and gets them into big and major trouble. So they're generally, you know, considered to be like dangerous to the point of, you know, life-threatening dangerous,
right.
So but in any case, so that's just a little bit of a background of a more historical nature, with something which is very unique about this bracha. So I want to talk a little bit just about a couple things which are all related to the nature of this bracha being additional. I don't know if we'll get through all of it tonight, and the proper introduction to this bracha we'll either do next week or we'll do after Bein Hazmanim, depending on how well Professor Zeller behaves. So tonight, the first thing I want to talk about is something which is revealing about the general nature of tefillah, and specific to this bracha has significance. But the Rambam writes in the second chapter of Hilchos Tefillah, Halacha Aleph, B'yamei Rabban Gamliel, Rabu Ha'apikorsim B'Yisrael. In the days of Rabban Gamliel, the Apikorsim, the Epicureans, the heretics, they became very plentiful among the Jewish people. They were bothering, which would mean they were causing pain to the Jewish people, and they were seducing them, Lashuv Me'achai Hashem, to turn away from following after Hashem. V'kevan shara shazu gedola mikol tzarchu b'nei adam. Once Rabban Gamliel saw that this was a need which was greater than all the other needs that people had, Amad Hu Beis Dino v'hiskin bracha achas shetia basha eila milvnei Hashem. He got up and he and his Beis Din established a new bracha to ask Hashem la'abid apikorsin, to do away with the apikorsin. V'kava osav tefila kideshi tia arucha b'fiakol. And they put it inserted into Shmoneh Esrei, an established set thing, in order that it should be something that everyone had down pat. It was something which was everyone was fluent in familiar with.
Rabbi Gamliel added this. This is his bracha.
Yeah. So he commissioned it.
Uh-huh.
Right. He actually did not write it. We'll talk about that either next week, 2 weeks, or I'm going to introduce the bracha for a significant point. But he commissioned it.
His people did it.
And right, Shmuel HaKatan was the one who actually composed it, but at the request of Rabban Gamliel.
Received his approval?
Hmm?
They received his approval?
Yes. So we'll talk about that more. But basically, the one point I want to focus on the Rambam here is, and in a more general sense, that the Rambam refers to that once Rabban Gamliel saw that this was Gedola Mikol Tzarchei Bnei Adam, this was the greatest need that people had, therefore he established it into tefillah. And I think this is something which is an important quality or qualification of what qualifies to make it into Shemona Esrei, the nature of the bakashos of Shemona Esrei are meant to be the needs, the central needs which are common to everyone. Everything which is which is necessary for everyone, these are the things which are common and necessary for everyone. Those things form the structure of the bakashos of Shemona Esrei, of the requests of Shemona Esrei, and those are the things which are, you know, we mentioned this at one point, these are in a certain sense instructive of what Chazal are saying should be your basic values that every person should have. I think that this is the answer to a question, which is, I think, a very bothersome question, and I believe this to be the answer. Never seen this anywhere, but I think this is the answer. That there's one thing which I think a lot of people would really like to have in Shemona Esrei, which is not there, which is anyone who has a child over the age of Mariel, about like 8 hours old, wishes that there was a bracha somewhere in Shemona Esrei for success with raising your children, right? So that's something that, you know, that's at the best of times, you know, raising children is a challenge, and at the worst of times, a very painful experience for people. And, you know, very, very noticeably missing from Shemona Esrei is anywhere in Shemona Esrei where you make a bakasha for help in being successful in raising your children. And, you know, there are different Hasidic Rebbes who have found, you know, a hint here and there, but, like, you don't have a hint here and there about your parnasa, like, that gets its own bracha. Why is there, you know, like, if you're clever enough to realize it in somewhere in, you know, the second bracha, there might be, you know, they throw it a bone. Why is Chinuch HaBana missing from Shemona Esrei?
Maybe because it's a mitzvah. It's a clear mitzvah. Maybe it's not a mitzvah to remember.
Tshuva is also a mitzvah. Right? Very good. Right?
Nice.
That what qualifies for Shemona Esrei is that these are unanimous. These are uniform, that this is common to everyone. This is everyone's basic needs.
Wow.
And not everyone has children. And therefore, a 14-year-old is meant to daven the same Shemona Esrei as, and, you know, anyone who is older doesn't have children also. It's 14, most 14-year-olds don't have children. That's why I pick 14-year-old. But anyone who doesn't have children is still davening Shemona Esrei. That is not a common need, which is a basic need of everyone.
You can daven for the next generation, though. You can say, not my children, but the children of Israel. The way that Klal is raising the next generation.
That's true. However, we discussed this in the past, that the general structure of Shemona Esrei is things which, even though you are davening for the tzibor, they are personal needs which you are davening for. You might be davening for each and every individual, but these are. It is not a universal need, and therefore it is not. I believe that's the reason why it's not included in Shemona Esrei, because it's not something that everyone needs. So that, I think that is the nature of what qualifies something to be included in the Shemona Esrei. Now, that being said, that has tremendous significance for our bracha, which is that our bracha was the statement that this is a universal need that everyone had, which means that the greatest tzaddikim had the need for a bracha of against those who were seducing others who were enticing people to turn away from their heritage, from their Mesorah. You know, this was something that was a need for everyone. It doesn't make it into Shemona Esrei if this is just something that many people need, or that's, you know, it's a big deal for those who need it. This is something that's universal. So I think that this is as the Rambam actually does not point this out, but the many points it out, that this was after the Churban. It was after the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, is when this bracha of the Lamal Shinim was composed and commissioned. It was after the Churban it became something which was a universal need, this having a response to those who were pulling people away from Judaism was a universal need that everyone at that point had that need. At the point at which there was no more bias, at the point at which there was no more nevuah, the last of the Nevi'im were in the beginning of the second bias, right? And the Anshei Knesset Gedola included the last of the Nevi'im. At the point of the age of the stage of Nevuah, a Navi is called a Roe and a Chose. They're seeing. Seeing, when you see something, that's where it's clear. Re'iyah and Raya, proof, the same word. right? Because it's something when it's clear, when everything was, when there was no sectarian movement before the end of Nevuah, because you know what? You had a Navi. You could say, by the way, you're wrong, right? But at the point at which you move from the end of Nevuah, and very fascinating, you find that the first Chacham, the first leader of the Jewish people at that stage, was Shimon, hearing. And that was the point at which we moved more into the world of, from Nevuah, which is Torah Shebichlav, into Torah Shebaal Peh. That's what's orally transmitted. It's that which you hear. It's not that which you see. At that point, there's room for unclarity. There's room for... There is no more 10 Nisim happening every... Okay, that didn't happen in the second bias anyway. But there is no more Navi, who is the decisive... That clarity, that irrefutable Mesorah, is no longer there. It's possible for someone to come along, and that's why the very next generation were Tzadok and Baitus, the beginning of the Tzadukim and the beginning of the Baitusim, the very next generation after the end of Nevuah, after you lose that clarity, and after the destruction.
No time, one generation.
That's right. After the destruction of the Bias came along, where there are those who can come and say, by the way, there's the you know, we're doing this all wrong, and we have a different approach. And the very next generation came along, that certain individual who changed the world. Not for the better.
Well, this brought
the Rambam
said
there's a certain
basis.
So this brought out a very emergency basis. That's what the Rambam.
Like there's no delay. We got to do this now.
The Rambam says that Rav Gamliel realized this was the greatest need that people had, and he got up and he said, "We need to make this bracha, right?" But that's the nature of being after the Churban, of being post that period, of having that clarity of the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, of having the clarity of having a place where you could go, where the Beis Hamikdash was Ki Mitzion Teitze Torah, was Valisa El HaMakom Ahu. That's the place where Torah was espoused from, was disseminated from. It's when you have the loss of that place and that Giloy of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world, the lack of that clarity, that suddenly becomes a universal need for everyone to have something to defend themselves spiritually from those forces pulling people away from Mesorah. And that was not coincidental that it was at that period in time that it became a universal need. Even the greatest tzaddikim, there's now in the world, there is such a thing, there is such a pull, and even the greatest tzaddik needs this bracha, because that's something that is now a reality in the world, is that combating opposing force pulling away from following after Hashem, and therefore it became a universal need.
But it was there before as well. I mean, what about all the faith in the Torah? All the things that people are doing that are not following Hashem. It's not like everything is perfect up until the point of the second base is a Churban, and all of a sudden there is Jews who are wayward. Right. There's always wayward Jews.
So up until the time, with the exception of possibly the Erev Rav, which was its own situation, they weren't exactly, you know, your regular Jews. With that exception, there was no such thing as a people who came along and said that...
Korach doesn't count.
So Korach is the one exception. And what was the response to Korach? Korach gets, you know, a unique once-in-history miracle created just to show that he is wrong. And the Rambam says that is the source of the eighth principle of faith. That's the source of the pasuk when Moshe says, "Bezos tedum ki Hashem shalachani lasos kol masim amesa aela velo milibi." That's the source that the Torah that Moshe gave from Hashem is exactly the Torah that's meant to be. There is no mistake in the Torah. This is not we don't have the wrong message from Hashem. Moshe MS and the Torah also MS comes from that one case where you had someone said no, not just someone who had a Yetzirah or someone who did an isolated Aveira, but someone who wanted to make a movement out of saying we've got the wrong idea. That person was swallowed up by the earth because they showed there's no basis, there's nowhere for him to stand. That's why he specifically, the earth swallowed up. It had to show there's no makom, there's no place for such a belief, right? But that lasted as long as there was a bias in there and there was Nevuah. But up until then, I think it's the Zohar says, not the Zohar, it's a Medrash that says that by the Rishonim, it says exact words that Nisgala Ketam, that basically that at the point at which their sin was revealed, the end of that sin was also revealed. The way the Rav Dessler explains that when someone sinned in those times, when we sin, what we basically do is we convince ourselves that what we're doing is okay, right? We come to the point where we can reconcile what we're doing and say that really it's okay. And therefore, after we sin, do we feel bad? No, it's okay what I did. I already convinced myself of that. Back then what happened was just like you might see a cheeseburger and know the cheeseburgers are wrong, but you really want it anyways. And hopefully you're holding by a point where, you know, your desire for the cheeseburger, you could overcome it. But they were at a level where the only avers that they did was where the Yetzer Hara can convince them that what you're doing is really okay. The only thing the Yetzer Hara could do was give them a taiva that was so strong that it was such a struggle. If you were starving and there was, you know, something that's treif, it becomes a much bigger... And the more enticing it is, the more of a challenge it becomes, even though you know it's wrong, right? So the Yetzer Hara's only struggle against them was not to convince themselves that something else other than what the Torah says is correct, but to say, even though it's correct, this is what I want this. And therefore, as soon as they did what was wrong, and the taiva went away, immediately they felt terrible about it, because they didn't think what they did was okay, and that's immediately they did teshuvah.
So at that level, if you're a tzaddik, at that level, the Yetzer Hara has to go after your gashmius. It can't go after your ruchnius.
I guess you could say it that way, right? But we don't really operate on that plane anymore.
Right.
But basically, so this was the beginning of, you know, a philosophy which said mitzvos are not binding. The Rambam writes in Pirkei Avos, in the third mission in Pirkei Avos, the Rambam writes that the Tzadukim, we know famously that Tzadukim came along to argue with the Torah Sheh Be'al Peh. They came along to argue with the Oral Torah. Says the Rambam, they didn't really come along to argue with the Oral Torah. They came along to argue with the entire Torah. But the Torah Shebichsav was such an entrenched, accepted thing.
And undeniable, it's right there in front of you.
Right, to try and tell people the Torah Shebichsav is wrong, and you abandon that, they would have been stoned to death if they would have suggested such a thing. So what did they do instead? They were very clever. They denied the Torah Shebaal Peh, and once you deny it, and they said, you know, it's been so long since Har Sinai, and they got it wrong, and look, obviously, you know, these things are ridiculous interpretations, and Torah Shebichsav is all, Shebaal Peh is all wrong. Of course we accept Torah Shebichsav, but the problem is that as soon as you don't have the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebichsav means whatever you want it to mean. That's why Rabbi Susie can have an entire website giving drushas based on the Torah Shebichsav, because she has no problem reading in whatever philosophy you want into the Torah Shebichsav. If you have no guidelines, if you have no rules and no structure to it, then the Torah Shebichsav, there is no Torah. If you don't have a Torah Shebaal Peh, you don't have any Torah. And that's why I believe the Rambam includes the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh are one ikar. In the 13 principles of faith, the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh do not each get their own ikar. The veracity of one is wrapped up with the other, because they go hand in hand. If you don't have one, you don't have the other. But that was the as soon as the period of Nebuah ended, as soon as that clarity went away, so then you had coming along these movements and saying that the Torah that we have is not the way it's meant to be, the mitzvos that we have are not the mitzvos that we're supposed to be doing, and an entire philosophy, not just people who had one aveira here, one aveira there, people who rejected the entire system, the entire structure of Torah, was something that cropped up specifically after after that period. And that's the period where a bracha of Lamalshinim or Mishumadim or whatever it is, the bracha against the Tzadukim, and that's why it's Birkas HaTzadukim, because it's specifically those movements which were able to challenge the veracity of the Masorah, that they came up at that time, and that's when it became necessary.
But why wait until Yehuda HaNasi? Why wait hundreds of years? Why wouldn't Rabban Gamliel say, you know what, now we're codifying Mishnah? Why wait hundreds of years to write down the Torah? If you had it in that generation, it would be like written Torah.
The problem wasn't they said that you have the wrong Mishnayos. The problem was they said that what you're teaching is wrong. It's not that I'm not sure you're teaching the same thing that your Rebbe said. They're saying, I'm not interested in what your Rebbe
wrong
said.
It's back and back and back.
Yeah,
it's wrong at least from Moshe Rabbeinu.
At least as far as Moshe Rabbeinu. Uh-huh. Right. possibly even that there is no Torah Shabbat, Shabbat Peh, whatever exactly they claim. But I mean, one, the what are they called, the Karaim, the Karaites, you know, they
San Francisco, they exist today. Right.
So they say, from what I've heard, it's not
dark
so
houses,
simple.
Right? Dark houses.
Right, from what I've heard, it's not so simple, but the basic premise of their idea is there is no Torah Shabbat Peh. The Torah is meant to be taken super literally, bein l'chumra, bein l'kula, and that's what they do, right? Sadukim on the other, right, they were just, I don't know if they're, clearly they were doing with an agenda of what they wanted to do, not what they really wanted to get rid of the whole Torah, but either way, that was something which...
But they kept mitzvahs that were written down,
they kept meaning they kept that which they absolutely could not squirm out of,
uh-huh.
Right? And that's the idea that the Rambam is saying, that basically they couldn't deny the Torah Shabbat Chassav, anything which is, you know, so overt in the Torah Shabbat Chassav that there's, you know, it says don't murder, so like, not much you can do about that, right?
But they wanted to be Jews. They wanted to marry their kids, to marry Jewish kids. They wanted
I guess so. It could be more that they wanted to be accepted. That they wanted to be accepted, and they wanted to justify calling themselves Jews while merging in with the rest of the nations.
Right. That sounds very familiar.
That's right. And that's probably a major motivation of most sectarian sects. It's, you know, it's hard to be Jewish. It's, you know, a rewarding experience, but it's comes with its challenges. All right, so that was the first point I wanted to make. We have to stop in a couple minutes, but I'll just briefly make one more point, and I guess we'll pick up with this next week. But the Rabbeinu Bechaye, we mentioned this before, that both the Rabbeinu Bechaye and the Ra'avan refer to a structure of the middle brachos of Shemona Esrei in which there is a parallelism, in which the first six correspond to the next six, and there are 13 middle brachos, not 12, because there is one added in. The way the Ra'avan structures it, he counts the Lamal Shinim in his six connected six corresponding to six, and he leaves out Shema Kolenu, which he says is a general summary, is a general bracha, you know, topping everything off, as opposed to Rabbeinu Bechaye, his six corresponding to the other six, his parallel structure, leaves out the Lamal Shinim. He says that was added later, and that was as a bracha of a different nature, and therefore that's excluded from the six corresponding to six parallelism. And you know what, I think it might take too much to go through exactly what you're thinking. We'll stop here, and we'll pick up with this next week and go through exactly what's the point that Rabbeinu Bechaye makes about the some way in which the 13th bracha of the Lamal Shinim is fundamentally different from the other 12 of the middle brachos. All right.